28 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock on a Thursday, an unusual day for Gavin Steinhobel to be in the studio. Feels odd, hey?
It does feel odd.
Well, you know, we've had holidays and things like that in the way, so it's nice to see you again.
Yeah, good. I didn't want to miss two in a row.
Because the week before you were out,
away, yeah.
Catching trout and having a lovely bonding. Right. Yeah, you live the life. I thought today we would take a look at property-related matters because you're an expert in these things. And generally speaking, I think there are issues around property transfer, buying and selling of property that people might be interested to know about. And particularly the problems that occur when you don't know. And one thing that I think is of huge interest to discover, often not to particularly to your benefit if you're selling a property, is the fact that if you have a bond and now you've sold your property, made a healthy profit, and you're just going to flatten your bond, oh no, you've got a huge penalty to pay because you didn't give the bank 3 months'
That's
notice
right.
of your intention to settle.
That's right.
Where does that come from? And why? I mean, if you want to settle your debt, you just, I mean, surely to pay, there's the money, I owe you 10 rand, here's 10 rand with interest. No, you've got to pay them now a penalty. For what?
Well, yeah, it is an unpopular one. What the banks have done is they've lent you money initially, and they've calculated that on their lend they'll make X amount of interest. And if you go and terminate your bond early, obviously, I'm not saying they're losing that money, but they're not going to earn all the interest on the loan. So in return, they raise a penalty because they haven't, you've ended your loan early, so it doesn't sound right, does it? Even when I say it, what does happen? There's two ways to mitigate it. The first is that when you go to market, you tell your bank immediately, send them a note that you are taking your property to market and that you will be cancelling your bond prematurely, and that should deactivate that penalty. The other alternative, and this is a lot of people do is they go to the bank and say, look, I know I'm in for this penalty, I didn't give you the 3 months notice, but I'm going to continue and buy another property and I'll need a bond on that property, so if I raise the bond with you again, then will you waive the penalty? So that is another way of dealing with it.
And they're not. Are they open to that?
They are open to that. Well, it makes sense, you know, because you can imagine what the amount of interest earned on a couple of million rands bond is over a decade.
Well, I was just thinking, but so, isn't it peculiar that I don't think, well, I mustn't make assumptions, but in my experience, which is limited, I admit, but I don't ever recall a bank or any financial institution where you have applied for a bond and it's been granted giving you a huge notice to say that if you want to settle this bond early, we are going to penalize you heavily unless you give us 3 months' notice.
I must be honest, I've never really figured out what the penalty is or whether it's that significant, but I'm sure it's a couple of grand that you would rather spend on something else. So, that penalty is a real thing, and it's strange to want, you know, that this would happen, but what you're doing is you're asking, you've loaned money over a certain term and you're asking them to cancel the bond. You also have to pay for the actual cancellation of the bond in the deeds office, which is another five or so grand. So there's those are all sort of hidden costs if it's your first time. You know, the second time round, obviously you understood fully what happened the first time round, and you add that into your calculations. But so it also depends. I mean, you get bonds and bonds, you know. Some bonds are fixed term bonds, and you can only pay them down. You can't borrow.
You can't settle them early.
Yes, you can't go ahead and then you've got access bonds, which are bonds that basically just secure a fixed sum of money.
Yeah,
and if you get ahead of your bond, that's great because your installments go down, and then you can draw back the amount that you've gone ahead.
And apparently, that particularly for our somewhat more advanced in years listeners is a very good way of ensuring that you have the ability to access funds in an emergency should you
correct,
require.
Yeah.
Because apparently if you pay off your bond, your access bond, and you reach a certain age, you're not going to get another Bond. Goodbye, Charlie Brown. Even if you're in fabulous health and intend to live for another 30 years, they will not give you, because if you're older than, I think it's 60, whatever the cutoff point
is. Yeah, it's quite, it depends. It really depends on what security you're giving them. You know, they'll almost give you a Bond at any age.
Really?
But it depends on how good your security is. If you're sitting on a 20 million rand property and you want a 2 million rand facility, they'll give it to you because it's 100% secured.
Because if you default, they, yeah.
You must understand that a bond is the top form of security that you can have as a lender, because it gives you the first claim against that property way before anybody else or any other creditor. So when that property gets sold, it can only be transferred if your bond is cancelled, and you'll only cancel your bond if you're paid in full. So it's perfect security. And, you know, people always look at it from the point of view of the borrower. But you must think that if you can give lenders good security, then you have access to funds you wouldn't otherwise have had access to. And it's the ability of human beings to borrow money and pursue schemes and pursue whatever they need, that expands the economy and it helps you take advantage of opportunities you see. So you do need.
So on the one hand, you've got the sage advice in life to say, do not incur debt, because debt is bad.
Yeah.
But if you ever want to be creditworthy, you've got to have massive debt.
I also think what people often do is you must understand that if you're going to borrow money at the prime interest rate, hopefully you're going to use it for something that's going to earn more than prime for you. Otherwise, you're going backwards. Unless it's one of the few things that, you know, we just can't buy cash. You know, most people can't just go and buy home cash. They kind of have to buy a home and pay it off over 20 years.
Well,
and most people can't buy a vehicle cash, you know, because they just don't have that sort of money. So,
you see, now you make an interesting point, and I want to get onto that one. Most people, and I'm talking about most honest, ethical, hardworking, tax-paying, good people, ordinary, like you and I, can't afford, because, well, you know, the odds are Then you get people that come and buy cars and homes with cash regularly, many of them in the political world, and you think, hello, how did you acquire this kind? Is there never an inquiry into that?
Well, we're supposed to. You know, everything gets reported and FICA gets done and so on. But, you know, if the institutions charged with investigating these things are damn squibs, then nothing will happen. So it's obvious to anybody who participates in this economy or any economy in the world that, you know, at the moment the deal is pretty rotten for the working class. You know, you tax to the absolute hilt.
Yeah.
Then you take your money that you're taxed on and you go to town, and then you pay VAT on everything you buy, and then you decide to put a little bit of money away. And when you sell those shares, you've got to pay capital gains tax on that. Or if you invested in a property and you sell it, you've got capital gains tax on that. And then finally, when you die, the state will take, you know, 20% again. And so, I mean, it's ludicrous that we've ended up in this situation. And of course, you know, that's a lot of money that's just been taken from the average person throughout their lives. And the political class are enjoying it, obviously.
And you say it's ludicrous. It is ludicrous.
When you put it like that, it is.
But it is what it is, I suppose, and one has to live with it.
Now, well, you know, but I think, and it seems to be that there's sort of some sort of collapse of even first world economies at the moment, and I think the sole cause of that is that the political class and political structures are simply too expensive for the economies that need to sustain them. And that's especially so in this country.
Now, you know, it does then lead us on that particular thought, leads us to the potential loss of property due to expropriation. And if one has, in the horrific situation, should it ever transpire to become reality, where you have a property expropriated for whatever reason, but you owe money to an institution on that. Would the state then expropriate your bond at the same time? In other words, would you then be relieved?
This very issue is first and foremost of our political hot potatoes at the moment, because, as you know, the EWC Act, it's not called that, has been signed by President Ramaphosa last year, and essentially it says that in certain circumstances, which are always very vague and grey, and if it's in the public good, that the government can expropriate and that null compensation can be considered to be compensation, which basically means we could take your property and not pay you for it. Now, there's three properties in Boksburg currently that are being expropriated by the municipality there, and they've said they're not paying for them. And the idea is to cut them up into sort of 150 square meter little stands, service them, and put them out as low-cost housing. The owners of those properties are saying, well, you know, we should be... we should be compensated. Obviously, there's over 300 hectares of land, and the municipality is saying, "No, no, we've read the act. This is very much in the interest of the public that we take this land." And so, so we begin now. These are the test cases that'll go to will go to court now, and the court will decide, is this just a way of sidestepping Section 25 of our Constitution that says that you can't take anything from, the government can't take anything from you without paying you for it, or is it a special case? And I think what's going to happen is that if this is successful, it's going to be the beginning of a Zim-type scenario where we become uninvestable. Because if the banks are not, if the banks are going to lose like that, they're not going to lend. And if foreigners who would invest in this country could lose their investment like that, they're not going to invest. So the effects on the economy is like a massive double whammy. And that's precisely what happened in Zimbabwe. Is the minute that the farms were simply taken and the farmers chased off, property rights were no longer secure. And if property rights are no longer secure, you cannot offer property as security to the banks, and you can't convince anyone to buy the property, because why would you spend millions of rands on property that can simply end up being worth
nil? Well, exactly, and it comes back to the question, if you are bonded on that property, which is expropriated, are you still liable for the bond?
You will still be liable for the loan. You'll still be liable for the loan. I just don't know how the state would take transfer without cancelling the bond. So possibly the bank could get paid. But, you know, ultimately, this is a classic case of sort of Marxist ideology running rampant over systems that work. And no thought being given to the effect of what they're doing. So it's fine to trumpet the idea that we need low-cost housing, but going about it in this manner is precisely going to create more people who need low-cost housing, because it's going to destroy the economy.
Wow.
So, you know, the long-term effects of this are massive, and it's a very important time in our country to see where we go. Do we respect property rights or don't we? Because if we don't, the message is loud and clear. And I know that South Africa just voted against a proposed bill in the World Trade Organization, together with India voted against it. And it was basically investment for development rules. So the World Trade Organization makes trade rules, and it's only made three ever because they need a unanimous vote of all the countries that are there. But nevertheless, to trade in this world, you need to be part of the WTO, and we're seen as troublemakers there. And we wouldn't vote for this bill which facilitates investment in a country, because one of the things you have to do is forswear the possibility that you would expropriate without compensation.
Wow.
So what it is it's rules of the game that say to investors, WTO member countries have all agreed that if you invest, it's secure. And, you know, that's good business. Why won't we do good business?
Well, okay.
Yeah.
It's an interesting scenario, which we will definitely keep an eye on.
Yeah, must watch those Boksburg cases, because that's the canary in the coal mine. And, you know, what happens there is going to have a massive effect.
Interesting stuff, always with Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law. And if you need a good attorney when it comes to property transfers or any other matter in that regard, you'll find him in Kloppers Inc. in the Balito Village. That's where Gavin Steinhobel is involved and resident and carries the flag. And on a Wednesday normally, but today being an exceptional day, he's with us in the studio. We look forward to another conversation in a week's time,
Always
Gavin.
Always a pleasure speaking with you, Dave.
Such a joy. And this will be up as a podcast, so you can follow it again. It's a fascinating one. Thanks, Gavin. We'll see you in a week's time.